Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going
to
find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stuff.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hello, everybody. And again, this is Peter Schiff. I am president of Euro Pacific Capital, and I'm your host for the one-hour Wall Street Unspun. We broadcast simulcast, actually, every Wednesday evening live, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, on 5.07 megahertz on shortwave, and on my website at www.europac.net, www.europac.net. And if you miss the live show, or if you have friends that you want to hear it, you can have them go to the website, they can listen to the archives, or they can listen to the rebroadcast on Saturday evening at 8:30 p.m. on shortwave 9.32 megahertz is the rebroadcast of Wednesday's show. Anyway, more volatility, mainly to the downside, in the precious metals and the mining sector, and also oil stocks and oil service stocks. You know, oil and gold stocks, commodity stocks in general, all trading together and all getting hammered. I mean, we had a pretty big bounce on Tuesday, but just got crushed again today. And, you know, I think this action is very typical of a bull market, of this stage in a bull market. You've got a lot of people, again, who are very quick to call the top. Many such people, of course, have called the top, before over the last several years. But you've probably got more people calling top and talking bubble right now. And I think that's a great sign that this market has got a long way to go. Remember, you know, at the top of a bubble, there is very few people talking about a bubble. You know, usually the type of psychology that you have at a market top isn't panic selling. It's euphoria and complacency. And I think generally the way a top is made is you see a gradual erosion of price where there's very little nervousness on the part of the participants that there's any problem. Here, we have some violent drops, very sharp violent drops, and I think there's a lot of people panicking and a lot of people nervous, and that is not the type of psychology that we experience at major market tops. I mean, maybe at major market bottoms, but certainly not at the top of a multi-year bull market. You don't see a lot of nervousness and panicking. I mean, it's actually just the opposite. So I think this is very healthy. I think we're shaking some people out. I think we're building a base for a big, big rally in this sector. And so if you're in this area, I would not be worried. If you do not have money invested in this area, it's a great time to get started. Great time. I think, in some of these stocks have never been this cheap in many, many years in relationship to the underlying asset backings of their companies. So if you want to talk about these type of stocks, make sure and talk to a Euro Pacific Capital broker at, 800-727-7922. Definitely some good buying opportunities in both speculative and conservative stocks in the natural resource sector. Also, remember, this is a call-in show, and I invite your questions, your comments. The number to call toll-free is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. There are no callers on hold right now, so the lines are open. So do make sure and give me a call, 888-678-9597. I'll talk a little bit about some of the, market action today. Oh, first, too, the stock market continues to be weak, and I've been pointing this out recently. We continue to sell off of the stock market, and we're right near, I think, a critical level in, you know, the S&P and the NASDAQ, we're up against a rather important trend line. So, you know, we might get a bounce off this trend line. If we do, we'll have to see what happens if we retest it. But if we break this trend line, and if we do it, you know, soon, this market could have a pretty big drop. I mean, maybe even something, similar to what we've seen in these mining shares. You know, mining shares have dropped. I mean, gold, XAU index was down 5% today alone. And, of course, we've had several drops in the last couple of weeks of 4 and 5%, which are huge, huge moves. In fact, these stocks are dropping, you know, far, far faster than they rose. And with much, you know, much, all the big moves. Look, gold was down like $35 today. I mean, I've never seen an up day. I've seen gold now down $30 or more, I think, on three separate days in the last few weeks. I've never seen gold up $30. I've seen it up $20. But, you know, we have the big moves. The biggest moves are all have all been to the downside. And that doesn't seem like action typical of a market top. You know, I think that, you know, before this market tops out, we're going to have to see some really big moves to the upside. You know, some spectacular up moves, not just some spectacular down moves. But what I was bringing up, wanted to point out, was the way the market reacted today to the housing data. You know, first this morning, earlier this morning, we got much weaker than expected durable goods orders. And the dollar caught a, you know, should have sold off. You know, the euro and the Swiss caught a little bid on the back of those numbers. But they weren't able to mount a rally, and the dollar quickly moved back into positive territory. But then, just moderately positive. But then people were expecting a decline in new home sales. And the market was anticipating a decline. Instead, we had an increase. You know, instead of a 4%, 4 or 5% drop, there was a 4 or 5% increase in new home sales. And that really caught the market off guard. The dollar immediately rose, and it had a huge rally before surrendering some of the gains, you know, in the last hour of trading. But still finished pretty strong on the day. All because of the houses, the new home sales, were strong, and that was indicating that maybe the Fed would not pause. You know, now we got this data-dependent Fed, and people are looking at the data, and it's pretty obvious to a lot of people that the housing market is, that determines the economy, that determines the stock market. So any evidence, or at least what Wall Street perceives as evidence, that the housing market is still strong, such as a increase in new home sales, and the market, took off. Or the dollar did, anyway. The stock market initially rallied and then sold off, but it did manage to finish the day with a small gain. But I think this number, these housing numbers, are very misleading, very misleading. Number one, new home sales, unlike existing home sales, count the sale the minute a contract is signed, as opposed to an existing home, which the sale counts when the escrow closes and it actually sells, and the money, the buyer pays the seller, and the deal is consummated. So new home sales are not necessarily as reliable because they don't necessarily indicate actual sales. They indicate somebody agreeing to buy at some point in the future, but you don't really know if that individual is going to qualify for the mortgage, get the financing, maybe there's a contingency, like the sale of another house. And also, a lot of times, it's, you know, the buyer puts down a deposit, because maybe, the place that he's buying isn't ready for another 6 months or a year. And a lot can happen in 6 months to a year. You know, the buyer could lose their job, the buyer could have another change of financial circumstances that would make it impossible for him to qualify, or again, perhaps he had a house he needed to sell. Or the market could go down and the buyer could just decide that they don't want to buy. And they could walk away from the deposit because the price of the property might have dropped by significantly more than the amount of the deposit. So that's number one. But number two, yes, new home sales have increased recently. But the real reason, in my opinion, that we've seen a pickup in new home sales is because the real estate developers have gotten more aggressive in this market and have been discounting rather heavily their homes. You know, they've been throwing in a lot of incentives, no mortgage payments for a year, 3 years of a BMW lease, $25,000 credit at, you know, furniture stores or upgrades, you know, free granite countertops or, you know, free, better floors or whatever. They've been throwing in all kinds of perks. Some of these home builders have had these weekend-only sales, you know, buy, you know, now get $100,000 off. I mean, all kinds of concessions and things to drive sales. And so that's why they've been able to get some extra sales is because they've been cutting their prices and offering incentives in the market. And I think these new home sales are coming at the expense of existing home sales. And I think we'll get that number tomorrow, so we'll see if my hunch is right. But I'm pretty sure even if the numbers tomorrow don't verify this or pan it out, I think that that is what's happening. I think that, you know, the people who already own homes and are looking to resell a home, they have been reluctant to substantially drop their asking prices. I think they still have their minds stuck on the fantasy prices that maybe one of their neighbors was able to sell for, and mentally, you know, that's how much money they think their house is worth, and they don't want to move away from that mental fantasy, and so they feel that if they keep their price up there, that eventually they'll get that price. The developers, you know, some of these guys own this land for years, you know, their cost basis. A lot of times, you know, they've been rolling profits, you know, for tax purposes. They have a lot of profits in these last houses. Doesn't really matter what they sell them for. They just want to get rid of them. They just want to unload them. And so I think that's why you're seeing the increase in new home sales. In fact, I looked at an article in the Orange County Register, which obviously this is just a small sampling. It's Orange County, but I think it could be indicative of some of these hot markets around the country. But year over year, new home prices were up about 12%. But, I mean, previously owned homes were up about 12% in price. New homes were down 6.5% in price. So you see previously owned homes going up and new homes dropping. And now if you look at the sales volume for new homes was up 9% on the year from last year, 9% higher than last year. But previously owned homes were down 32%. So a sharp drop in the number of previously owned homes sold, but an increase in the number of new homes. And again, why? Well, the new homes had a 6.5% drop in price, whereas the previously owned homes had a 10% increase. So that's what's happened. You're just seeing the existing homes where the prices are still high, they're not selling, and they're just piling up on the market. Meanwhile, the new homes, they're leading the prices down, and so therefore they're selling. Because the previously existing homes aren't really on the market. Sure, they're on the market, but the prices are not where the market is. So why would anybody go and overpay for a previously owned home when they can get a good deal, at least relatively? Because I think anybody who's buying a new home today, despite the fact that the price is being discounted, it's being discounted relative to a ridiculously high market. And if you're just patient and wait, you know, the discounts are going to get a lot better than they are now. But I think that's what's the story in the market. Anyway, we've got three callers on the line, so I don't want to let them build up anymore. Let me go to the phones. Let's take Daniel first from New Jersey. Go ahead, Daniel.
Yes, hi. How are you? All right. I have two questions for you. First one is, let's say that I own gold and silver, and 10 years from now they're, you know, at much higher prices that I decide to sell them. I can obviously sell them on eBay. I can sell them on to the dealers. And, you know, I'm first asking, you know, sales taxes obviously will apply, you know, interstate and all that stuff. But what about capital gains tax?
Well, there's no sales taxes on precious metals, right? I mean, so that's not a factor. Capital gains taxes don't apply either. They're considered collectibles, and so you would pay a collectible tax, which I think is 28%. You don't get capital gains treatment on gold and silver, but there are no sales taxes. And, you know, I think it's not going to take 10 years for the price of gold and silver to go into the stratosphere. I think it'll take more like 1 or 2 years.
Okay, so then I have to just report it as collectible sales and just pay 28% of the gains.
Right. I mean, that would be the way that the IRS would want you to report it, yeah.
28% of the gains, not of the total.
Of the gains, not of the total. So if you bought gold at 650,
Right.
You sold it at 5,000. You know, your gain is the difference between 5,000 and 650. Now, the problem is a lot of those gains are going to be pure inflation. They're not going to be real. So you're going to be paying a tax on a phony gain because you're not going to have all that extra purchasing power because that, you know, if you want to buy anything, you want to buy a gallon of gasoline, it might cost you $20 or $30. So it's all relative, but, you know, the government's going to be able to make a lot of money based on the inflationary impact of income taxes.
Okay, my second question is that obviously I started buying gold when it's at $730, and then for the past 2 weeks I've seen it just go down and down and down.
Started buying?
Excuse me?
You just started buying? You just bought gold at the absolute top? You didn't buy any in the last, you know, 4, 5, 6 years?
No, I...
Sell your gold recently?
Just recent. So obviously getting a little bit nervous, but what do you think of today's major bloodshed?
That's a good question. Why'd you wait so long, number one?
Because I just started to get educated recently.
All right. Well, look, I mean, better late than never. Look, you're not buying at the top. I don't think you're anywhere near the top. But from a timing point of view, you happen to get in at a short-term top. And so hopefully the amount of money you committed is not all the money that you wanted to move into the market, and you do have the ability to take advantage of this downturn to accumulate more gold or silver. Is that your situation?
Yeah, obviously I didn't. You know, jump head in. But even if with the ones that I currently accumulated, I feel, a little bit, you know, nervous. But I think long term, I bought on fundamentals. I bought on really how I was educated for maybe a year before I decided to buy.
What form did you buy your gold?
Excuse me?
What?
Bars.
And what kind of, from whom?
From Northwest Territorial.
Yeah, so you actually took the physical bars.
Yes, I...
Well, good. You know, I deal in precious metals myself, and the way I work on it is through the Perth Mint Certificate Program. Have you been familiar with that?
No, but, I mean, I...
You ought to go to my website and read about the Perth Mint Program for buying gold, silver, and platinum. It's a great program. I think it's, it's a great way to buy gold. Having physical bars in coins is good, too, but also having a supply of gold offshore in a trusted location... like a government-owned mint in Australia. It's an inexpensive, private, low-cost way to have gold and silver. And you can learn about it on my website at www.europac.net.
Minimum there? I mean, I'm just buying 5 bars at, you know, I just bought 5 bars.
I think the minimum is $5,000 or $10,000.
Yeah, so maybe I have to save a little bit more for that.
Yeah, well, if anybody who's listening who's got the minimum... and they want to invest, they should call 800-993-8350. It's 800-993-8350. Danny Dwyer. She'll explain the program to you. Read about it on my website. It's a great buying opportunity, I think, right now with the pullback. You know, gold's around 630-ish, 640, something like that. So,
in the short term, do you think it's dropped even more?
I don't know. It could, but, I mean, I think, look, it's almost dropped $100 from its peak price. A $100 drop. That's a pretty big drop. I'd be buying with both hands if I didn't have any gold right now. And if I had some, but I was looking for an entry point, you know, as I said, $100 drop in a couple of weeks, that's a big drop. I would not get greedy. I would really be buying.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right, Dan.
Thanks.
And now we've also got Steve calling from New York. Go ahead, Steve.
Hi, Peter. Good afternoon to you.
Good evening.
My question is this. There's a debate within the bear camp about where the market is actually going in terms of dollar value. You have guys like yourself who called the NASDAQ at 5,000. You have guys like Mark Faber saying the Dow could go to 30,000, but relative to gold, it will still be in a bear market. The Dow has been in a bear market relative to gold prices. However, where do you see... do you see any possibility that the Dow will actually go higher in dollar terms, but in gold terms be lower, or do you see a massive sell-off in actual dollar terms for the Dow?
Well, I think that the most likely scenario is that the Dow goes down in dollar terms. You know, back in the 1970s, the bear market, you know, the Dow was at 1,000 in 1966, and it did sell off during the inflationary period of the 70s. It got as low as 600. It didn't have, you know, as big a nominal decline as we had in the 1930s crash. But in real terms, relative to gold and relative to the CPI, the bear market in the 1970s was every bit as bad as the crash in the 1930s, the 1929 and 1930s. Now, I think we'll have something similar this time, only more severe as far as the real drop in the market, because I think the market is starting from a level of valuation that exceeds the peaks that we had in the 60s, and I think the fundamentals and the inflation that we're going to live through is going to be worse than what we had in the 70s. So I think both the real and the nominal drop in the Dow can be greater, meaning that we might have the Dow Jones, you know, move down, you know, more than a 40% decline from its peak, maybe a 50 or 60% decline in nominal terms. The real decline would be a lot greater, I think, than a 50 or 60% decline. And certainly for the NASDAQ, I mean, the decline, I mean, it's going to be a bloodbath. But the only way that won't happen is if we end up going down the hyperinflationary route, which is something that we didn't have in the 1970s. Sure, we had high inflation, and we could have higher inflation now, but high inflation is not the same thing as hyperinflation. And if we do have hyperinflation, and I don't know what the odds are that the government presses it to the point that that's what we end up with. But if we do have hyperinflation, then the Dow is going to go higher in nominal terms, but no one's going to care. Okay. Everything's going to go higher in nominal terms, and it doesn't matter where the Dow goes. I mean, if you have hyperinflation, the dollar could have absolutely no value whatsoever. I mean, it could, you know, you can have millions of them, and you won't have enough money to buy a stick of chewing gum. So it doesn't really matter if you get hyperinflation. But if we don't, if the dollar survives as a viable medium of exchange, even if it doesn't survive as the world's reserve currency, which I think is pretty much a given, but if it survives at a lower level, then the Dow's going down. I mean, there's no question, because we're going to go through a serious economic contraction. Corporate earnings are going to implode. Interest rates are going to rise. Stock multiples are going to compress. And you're going to have to get the Dow Jones and the S&P to fall to where you're going to have a decent dividend yield. I think the dividend yield on the Dow is going to have to get into the double digits. I think it got to around 6 or 7% in the bottom of the bear market in the 1970s. I think it's going to have to get higher this time, because I think you're going to have to get a double-digit yield on the Dow before it really bottoms out. And with earnings falling, stock prices are going to have to fall even further to give you any kind of dividends. And, of course, some of these stocks, I mean, have no dividends whatsoever. And, you know, so it's going to be rough. But, you know, there's no way to know for sure what the outcome is. But in either outcome, you don't want to own stocks. You'd rather own gold or foreign assets or foreign currencies or, you know, anything but U.S. stocks. And certainly you don't want to own U.S. bonds. I mean, because U.S. bonds are definitely going to go down.
What would you see as a sign that, I think as a good investor, you always have to reexamine your ideas. And what would you say would be a sign to you that your argument regarding precious metals would be wrong? I agree with you on the metals, but I always like...
No, other than like some kind of modern day, you know, alchemists, where somebody comes up with a way to, you know, make gold, you know, out of some base metal, or, you know, I don't know, I mean, some inexpensive way to create gold, then that'd be the only thing. I mean, other than something crazy like that, you know, I don't know. I mean, maybe if somebody in the United States came, you know, if they invented some low-cost economical way to extract hydrogen from seawater and some way to, I don't know, some way to eliminate the need for hydrocarbons and, I don't know. I mean, there'd have to be some crazy thing that would have to happen to alleviate some of these imbalances or push them off into the future. I don't know. Maybe if somehow the United States government could convince the Japanese and the Europeans that they had to combine their currency with the dollar or create some world. I don't know. There'd have to be some way to just push this thing off and push our problems off on the rest of the world somehow, in a major way. You know, I don't know. Maybe if we could convince some other countries to adopt the dollar, some other major countries to adopt the dollar as their currency. But I don't know. I mean, I think we're at a point now where there's really very little that could possibly happen. That I think that we're already set on a course, and you know, and there's no veering off of it. You know.
Well, thank you for your time.
All right, Steve. Well, appreciate the call. Are you a client?
Yes.
All right. Great. Well, thanks for the call, and keep working with us.
Have a good day.
All right, I know I want to. I got one more caller. I want to take a quick commercial break, and we'll pick up after the break for any other calls. And remember, the number to call toll free. We still have some lines open. Is 888-678-9597. 888-678-9597. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a minute.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we're back live. This is Peter Schiff speaking live to anybody who's not watching the finals of the American Idol. Anyway, the number to call is 888-678-9597. 888-678-9597. The lines are open, so please call, and let's take a call from Jeff in Cleveland. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hi, Peter. Let's assume that the really bearish scenario occurs. I think I've heard you talk to other, about possible social disruption. How is that going to be handled if we have a total meltdown with all your assets offshore, such as your Perth Gold program or your stocks overseas? How is that going to do you any good in a real meltdown? In the age of communication, things are going to happen quite rapidly if things go really bad.
Well, I mean, obviously, if your neighbors break into your house and kill you, then, yeah, it's not going to matter. I guess maybe if your heirs can get your money. But, yeah, if we have a lot of social unrest and, there's rioting and looting and it's lawless. I mean, I suppose it's better to have some money just in case, things calm down or you manage to, get out of Dodge. But yeah, I don't know how bad things could get. I mean, things could get very bad. I'm afraid that the American culture, the American population, if you look at how a lot of the inner cities act, I mean, look at what happened down in New Orleans during the floods, those pictures of all the looting, and look what happens every time there's a power outage or if a major sports team even wins. I mean, everybody's looking for an excuse.
Right.
This is going to be very difficult because a lot of people are going to be blaming other people for these problems. And, one of the other problems is that the cities are going to have that is not going to be similar to other emergencies is that the cities might not be able to have the resources to afford to pay for the police protection. Or
didn't that happen in New Orleans a little bit? Some of the guys walked off and...
The city didn't have the money, but if the dollar loses value, I mean, even if the cities have dollars, why is a policeman going to work in exchange for them?
Right.
And, what if, if there's a real disruption, if we can't afford oil because the dollar's crashed and, we don't have the ability to transport stuff, so there's going to be shortages. I mean, even shortages of food and basic necessities, because either farmers aren't going to want to sell their crops for dollars, or even if they are, there's no way to transport them, especially into the cities, so people could be hungry, and they could be mad, and, I don't know, a lot of things could happen, and, you could really, I think that the fabric of the United States, I mean, during the Great Depression and during other periods of economic, at least I think the culture was such that, it was okay. I mean, it wasn't like there was this huge increase in crime and people really had to be worried.
I totally agree with you. I think of the Russians in the 70s, they'd wait in line around the block for a pound of butter that was rancid, pretty much orderly fashion.
Do that.
I don't think that's...
So there's a lot of things, and, these are things that I really can't do anything about. I mean, if somebody really wants to protect themselves from that, they need to just leave the country.
Right.
Or, you know, at least make sure that you've got a, and this is, you know, the radical advice, and, you know, if you say this, they people go, oh, you must be some kind of kook, but if you really want to, you know, and people buy insurance, and they buy all sorts of things that they think that they're not going to need, or they hope they don't need.
Right.
So it makes sense to have a supply of food, you know, dried up food, you know, so that you do have a way to feed yourself. If you have a well or fresh water, you know, if you have vegetables or you have some way, you have your own generator or something to get you through, you know, several months or maybe more of some of these problems. And it also wouldn't be bad that, you know, to have some firearms and some ammunition.
Oh, I agree. I think I spoke a little bit, you read a little too far. Let's not go quite that far to break down, but say like a bank holiday in 33 or whatever, and say the government locks in, you know, financial transactions. How are you going to be able to communicate, you know?
As long as you've got, I mean, it doesn't really matter what the government does or temporarily. If you've got gold or, you know, you've got your gold. I mean, obviously, if you physically need some gold for barter transactions, yeah, that's where you want to have some physical coins, maybe silver coins, junk silver coins. You want to have them in your possession so that you have them. I mean, you can have the bulk of your wealth in gold bullion in the Perth Mint. You don't need to access it. But yeah, in a real calamity, you might want access to some of your money so that you can exchange it for the things that you need, assuming that you're allowed to, or there's not a black market where you're doing it under the table.
Right.
But any accounts that you have at Euro Pacific Capital, let's say you have foreign securities in these accounts, even if for some reason, you know, there's some temporary loss of access to these accounts or the ability, you know, these assets, it doesn't mean that you've lost ownership of them, or that, you know, or that you've lost any of the appreciation.
Once
obviously these assets, the only way that your account, I believe, with me would be in jeopardy would be if the U.S. government seized it by issuing decrees or proclamations or executive orders to the effect that all foreign assets owned by American citizens are now the property of the American government.
Right.
And the American government might do that. I mean, governments do, you know, very oppressive things in times of war, in times of crisis. We have a very corrupt government. I think our government, the United States government, is among the more corrupt governments. I mean, it's probably not the most corrupt government in the world, but I believe that we routinely violate certainly the Constitution, and I think the government routinely violates laws and civil liberties. And I think the government and most elected officials think nothing about violating these liberties. I think, that's the kind of character of the people who are in office in the United States today. And I think, in general, the American public is much too quick to accept whatever the government does.
Right.
I don't think we have the type of Americans that were here around the Revolution, give me liberty or give me death type people, who want to stand up for principle and against tyranny and big government. I think people will pretty much be, you know, good Nazis today and do it to government. So I think there's the opportunity for the government to do stuff like that, certainly to scapegoat and vilify people maybe like myself or my clients who didn't go broke, who got their money out of the dollar, and maybe the government will try to blame us for these problems.
Right.
But, you know, they can certainly try to seize us. So if they do pass a law that and freezing your accounts and taking the assets, then, you know, I'm sure they won't take them and give you nothing. They'll take them and give you dollars, but big deal.
Right. One other real quick thing. So if your program's working well with these overseas stock markets, and as we saw the other day how the markets in the world kind of communicate so quickly that, like, once the U.S. crashes, won't that instantly, like, drag down these other indexes, and won't that kind of...
Yeah, I mean, I've...
What you've pushed over.
Yeah, the initial reaction, certainly, if we had a real crash in the U.S. stock market, I mean, like, you know, would foreign markets go down? Sure they'd go down. And the stocks that would go down the most would be stocks that are multinational, that do a lot of business in the United States, that are more impacted by the U.S. market. But even stocks that are in no way associated with the U.S. market. Because remember, market prices are a function of liquidity. They're a function of the supply and demand at the moment. And if people are nervous and want to sell, and there's not a lot of people who want to step up and buy, you're going to get bargains. You're going to get, you know, stocks are going to be cheap. It doesn't mean that those low prices are going to stay there. And it doesn't mean that you should sell waiting for that buying opportunity, you know. And the second thing is, even though foreign stocks might go down, They'll go down in terms of their local currencies, like the euro or the Japanese yen, but in terms of U.S. dollars, they're going to go up.
Right.
You know, because the dollar should get crushed. And so from our perspective, the assets in dollars will be more valuable. But I think the stuff that I'm buying, if there is a sharp drop, it won't last long. And the stocks will quickly rebound based on the underlying strength of their dividend yield that would underlie the stock. That, you know, if you can buy a stock, you can afford, you know, if this stock is paying 8 or 9% and it gets clobbered by 20% and now it's paying 11 or 12%, people are going to want those yields.
Right.
There's a reason to buy those stocks. And, you know, not a lot of people are really going to want to sell. I mean, you know, why would you want to sell it, you know, where the yield is that high? I mean, what would you do with the money that would give you a yield comparable? So, you know, I think there is a potential for that. But you remember, most of the stocks that we're buying, the bulk of our positions, are safe haven type stocks. But it's even possible that these stocks could be the beneficiaries of some of the flight capital out of the more speculative issues.
Right.
People are looking for a home, and they don't necessarily want to be in currency if they fear global inflation. Because if there is a fear of inflation all over the world, you know, people aren't going to want cash. So they're going to have some alternatives.
Right.
You know, because I think in previous periods in history, you know, people would retreat to cash. But I think more and more people are going to start to understand how risky an asset cash is. Because cash is what governments create. And they can create as much of it as they want.
And you don't have control over it.
Yeah. And I think that that's going to be the response in today's age to these crises. Governments are going to be, let's print more money. And so why would you want to own something that's going to be printed in that capacity, because, you know, it's going to be printed into oblivion.
Right. All right.
You want to own things that are scarce. You want to own things that are real, that represent real wealth, not just some piece of paper that politicians can run off a printing press. And now, you know, in the electronic age, they don't physically have to print the money. They can increase the money supply a lot faster today.
You're right.
You know, with electronic bank entries.
Right. All right. Thank you.
Okay, sure.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah, I mean, these are worst-case scenarios discussing that of social unrest and the need to have a supply of food or, you know, and, you know, to the extent that anybody wants to actually do that, you know, look, I mean, it can't hurt. I mean, certainly, you know, I know people in the 1970s, there were people that did that. There was people worried that that might have happened then, and some people probably bought some dehydrated food, and it turned out to be a waste. And, you know, and basically, hopefully, the people who were buying that food hoped that it was going to be a waste. I don't think anybody is going to wish for that kind of outcome. You know, that's a terrible outcome. And you certainly hope that doesn't happen. But I guess, you know, in the scheme of things, you know, it makes sense to be prepared. I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm not prepared. I don't have any of those things. And I don't know. I mean, certainly, if it comes to that and I didn't do anything, I'm certainly going to regret the fact that I did nothing. You know, there were people who were worried about Y2K that went out and bought stuff like that. I mean, I mean Y2K never bothered me at all. I was never one of the people that thought Y2K was ever going to be anything. So I never, you know, feared it because I just thought it was more hype, which it certainly turned out to be. But this economic collapse, this potential social unrest, that's real. That's not hype like Y2K was. It's real. It might not happen, but it's certainly a possibility. And, you know, individuals can decide to what degree they want to have insurance against possibilities, maybe remote possibilities, but not crazily remote. I mean, realistic probability of that type of outcome. Certainly depending on where you live, too. I think you got to, you know, look at, you know, where you're living and how closely you're situated to communities that might be prone to violence or certain type of actions, and that, you know, might alter how you prepare for it. But the important thing is, and what the purpose of this program is, and what I can help you do, is to prepare financially. That's, you know, to make sure that your assets are there. Because the loss of financial wealth, in my mind, that's an absolute certainty. There's not a question that U.S. dollar assets are going to lose value and lose a lot of value. I know that's going to happen. And so that's a risk that I 100% want to hedge because, in my opinion, it's a certainty. Right? I mean, I could be wrong, but in my opinion, I don't see how I can be. And so, therefore, that's something that you definitely don't want to leave to chance. You definitely don't want to say, well, you know, I'll keep my wealth in the dollars, I'll stay in the U.S. stock market, real estate market, and if what you say happens, well, all right, you know, I'll just go broke like everybody else, but I'm going to take my chances because it's a long shot. It's not a long shot. The long shot is that this doesn't happen. The long shot is you keep your money in dollars and the U.S. market, and you end up being okay. I mean, that would surprise the hell out of me if that were to happen. You know, we need to take action. We need to prepare. We need to have portfolios of non-dollar assets. Bottom line, you've got to get your wealth out of U.S. currency before it's too late. You've got to own real, tangible, income-producing assets around the world. And, yeah, you've got to have, you know, your share of gold and silver. You got to do these things. These are not, you know, maybe, what if, a worst-case scenario. This is the only scenario. This is something that you have to do. And if you don't do it, you're going to be extremely sorry. And there's no two ways about that. Anyway, let's play a quick commercial again, and we'll be back for any phone calls in the last segment. Are you commercial?
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we're back for the last segment. This is Peter Schiff, Wall Street Unspun, coming live every Wednesday evening on 5.07 megahertz on the shortwave and www.europac.net. Every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, and we are here for an hour. Anyway, we've got another 20 minutes left. The lines are open. If you do want to call, I try to get your calls in soon so we don't end up having them at the end of the program. The number to call is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Anyway, again, let me give that number. Just got a message. Read it out. It's 888-678-9597. The lines are open. If anybody has a call, go right ahead. Anyway, you know, it's interesting, too, because the market is now reacting to, you know, the data. You know, Ben Bernanke is saying that, you know, we're data-dependent now, whether he's going to raise rates or whether he's going to pause. But you know what's so ridiculous is the data that they're looking at right now, this data that they're looking at is old. That's like looking in the rearview mirror. I mean, if they don't know, if Bernanke doesn't realize that inflation is out of control and he's got to raise rates, if he's waiting for the data that he's seeing today, I mean, this data, I mean, this is old news. You know, he's got to be looking forward-looking. He can't be looking at this data. You know, I remember when I was in college, and I didn't learn too much about economics in college, even though I took a lot of econ courses. But one analogy that I remember that was actually pretty good was the man in the shower analogy to the Federal Reserve. And I still remember that analogy because I think it was pretty good. And it goes like this. You know, when you're taking a shower, a lot of times you get in the shower, and the water's too hot. And then you turn the knob a little bit, and it's still too hot. And you turn it a little bit, and it's still too hot. You turn a little bit more, it's still too hot. So you turn it a little bit more, and then all of a sudden it's ice cold. You know? or the other way. It's cold. You turn a little bit, still cold. Turn a little bit more. Turn a little bit more. Then all of a sudden, it's, you know, you burn yourself. And the reason is there's a lag, right? You know, you turn the knob a little bit, and it takes a while for the temperature to change. But you do it initially, and you don't notice the change, so you do it again. And then you don't notice it, you do it again. And by the time you realize that you've overturned the faucet, it's too late, and you burn yourself. And this is what how monetary policy works. The Fed, you know, lowers interest rates. They don't see anything. They lower it again. They don't see anything. They lower it again. They don't see anything. They lower anything again. They keep lowering it. And then all of a sudden, by the time they can see that they've gone too far, it's the same. It's the same analogy. Now, right now, I don't think the Fed has gone too far. I don't think they've gone far enough. I think they. I think that rates A never should have been lowered as much as they have. But in general, Fed policy. I mean, you can't just look at these numbers and decide, oh, you know, the GDP number was weaker or the housing number was this. Therefore, I'm going to base my interest rate decision that I'm making right now on the numbers that were released in the last 30 days. I mean, that doesn't make any sense at all. That's the impression that Bernanke is trying to make, that, you know, he doesn't know what he's going to do next in next month. It all depends on the numbers that come out between now and then. I mean, that doesn't even make any sense to say that. I mean, that's like saying you're clueless. I mean, you're clueless about how monetary policy in theory is supposed to work. Because these numbers that come out should mean nothing to what the Fed does now, because they're meaningless numbers. They're meaningless. Anyway, we've got a caller on from Texas. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, Peter. How you doing? Just a couple things for clarification. Number one, you mentioned that there's no sales tax on precious metals. There is a state sales tax in quite a few of the states, but like here in Texas, the person would have to check on their own state, but like here in Texas, if the purchase is less than $1,000, then what you have to do is you have to pay your standard state sales tax.
Well, that would be if you bought it from a Texas merchant then, but if you bought it from a merchant in another state, obviously it wouldn't apply, right?
No, that's correct. And the way around it is let's say that you're within your own state and you're purchasing it within your own state. In most cases, like what I've done here, is I will have it shipped to, like, say, my mother over in Alabama. Well, even though I'm purchasing it, it's being shipped.
Right, as long as it's being delivered out of state, then it would be exempt.
Right. So that's one way. So each person needs to check within their own state. The second thing was on, you mentioned Y2K. To draw the distinction between Y2K and the problems we're facing now, Y2K really was a very serious problem. I spent 33 years in the computer industry. The reason why Y2K was a non-event was because of the years of preparation in correcting code and correcting hardware and doing everything. But the real scare was whether or not we had caught everything, and thank God that we did. But that really was a very, very real problem. Now, the difference between that and the problem today with the U.S., where the Y2K is a bad analogy, is that there was a fix for Y2K. There is no fix for the problems now.
Well, no, there's no... There is a fix, but the fix includes a lot of pain economically for America. That's the fix. The problem is policymakers in Wall Street want the problem fixed without any of that, and it's impossible. The analogy is it's like, you know, if there's a guy who's you're a heroin addict and you want to get off heroin, but you don't want to go through any of the withdrawal symptoms. Well, there's just no way to do it without going through withdrawal.
Absolutely. The politicians never want you to feel the pain. They want to give you enough dopamine or something else to let you think that you're actually not in pain, which all it's going to do is when the day of reckoning really comes, it's going to be far worse. Two other quick things. Number one, today was a definite takedown in the gold market. Tomorrow is options expiration at the CRIMEX. And they needed to get gold down between $600 and $630. It'll be interesting to see what they do tomorrow in order to save the bacon of these options writers and prevent derivatives of blow-up. But this happens every single time that we have options expiration, and then people say that there's no manipulation in the markets. But That's what tomorrow is, and it'll be interesting to see what happens.
We'll see. You know, tomorrow we're going to get, you know, the sales numbers, I guess, from existing homes. I think we get them tomorrow. And if I'm right, you know, that those numbers could be pretty weak, and that could be the impetus for, you know, the dollar to sell off and gold to go the other way. But, yeah, generally option expiration is a time. And certainly, you know, what happens is some of the – I don't think it's any kind of conspiracy, but some of the larger sellers of options – you know, they don't want those. They don't want the market up there, so they could sell into it. You know.
Well, what, yeah. They well, the other thing is like I've called and mentioned before, there are very few specs in this market that are getting washed out. Yesterday was another prime example. Like the other day that I called you with. Yesterday we had a fairly nice little rise in gold, and with that about a $16 rise. The open interest fell over 8,000 contracts with quite a few swaps. So it's still the same thing again. It's short covering
yeah.
The gold cartel that is actually driving this market. Everybody else is sitting on the sidelines, and if they don't get in pretty soon, they're going to be left behind. If it wasn't for options expiration tomorrow, I don't think they would have been able to get it down, and because they expended a lot of powder getting that market down today. So it'll be interesting to see what they do after options expiration tomorrow. But Friday might be interesting because with the problems in the world today, you got to ask yourself, do you really want to go into a three-day weekend short of gold or without it?
Look, all I know, there's very few things that you can look at in life and say these are sure things. And, you know, as a broker, nobody can promise a sure thing. But as close to a sure thing as I've seen in my lifetime is that gold's going to go up.
Absolutely.
Because we're going to have a monetary crisis in the world. I mean, predominantly in the United States, but it's going to affect everywhere that currencies are used. And, you know, in a monetary crisis, where else are people going to go? I mean, that's where they're going to go. And if central banks are going to have to buy a bunch of gold. They're going to have no choice. They're going to have to get something to base a monetary system on. Because they just can't stick to fiat currencies. It's not going to work. And I think we're getting close to the point where the fallacy of this experiment that started, you know, with Nixon, you know, that this is going to end just like the founding fathers predicted it would have ended over a couple hundred years ago.
Well, the founding fathers had the history of the continental dollar, and they went through a fiat crash, and they know
a lot more history than a continental. But yeah, that was the you know what was had stuck in their craw. But the founding fathers were learned men, and they had studied all the way back to the you know to the Roman democracies, and I mean the Greek democracies, and they knew about inflation, and they knew about paper money. You know, it wasn't just the continental. Now that's the difference between you know. The people then and the people today, the people a couple hundred years ago actually studied and learned from history.
Well, if you ask most people today to define money, the only thing they would do is pull some paper out of their wallet and say, this is money. They cannot define what true money is.
Well, they've never seen it. They've never experienced it.
Right, and they have no concept of what money is supposed to be and how it's supposed to be a store of value and how you should be able to save it. It's an educational process that's going to have to come a very through the old you know a hard knocks of learning and people are going to experience it. Believe me.
All right. Well, Mike. Well, thank you for the call. We'll see what happens. You know, tomorrow and through the end of the week.
Okay, Peter.
All right. Yeah. You know, we only got I don't know, 5-6 minutes left, and you know the interesting thing that the take I'm getting on everything is that. Apart from the markets, you know, waiting with bated breath for every economic release because they're wondering whether the Fed is going to pause or not. And I think it's all immaterial what they do because the damage is already done and we're already set on a course that leads to disaster and there's no way around it. But, you know, when people look at the markets and the dollar and how they might react, and everybody is on the assumption that a more aggressive Fed, a Fed that raises rates an extra couple of 25 basis point hikes, you know, that that's somehow going to be dollar supportive because of the higher interest rates. And, you know, whether interest rates are 5% or 6% really doesn't amount to anything in the world where inflation is as bad in the United States as it is. And that extra, you know, 1% return is not going to do anything in the way of offering any meaningful, you know, consolation for the substantial debasement in our currency. So I don't think it really makes a difference. And also, I think that people who jump to the conclusion that higher interest rates are good for the dollar, I think they really underestimate. They really underestimate just how vulnerable the U.S. economy is to higher interest rates. You know, that's the big problem. You know, sure, higher interest rates in theory would make the dollar more attractive, but higher interest rates will also push the economy into recession and make the dollar less attractive because of the collapsing in the economy. And because higher interest rates in that fashion would actually sow the seeds for lower interest rates, because we know the way the Fed responds to a contraction in the economy is to immediately reduce interest rates. So that if the Fed were to get more aggressive, which supposedly is dollar friendly, the result would be that interest rates would come down a lot more, because the Fed would then react to the recession that it helped bring about. And so I think the market is not taking this to its ultimate conclusion and thinking, you know, enough moves ahead. And if you want to win a chess game and you're playing, you know, you can't just see one move. You got to be thinking several moves ahead and, you know, to position your pieces properly. And that's what I'm doing. You know, I'm looking at this chess game and I know the dozen moves. And I know where my pieces need to be to win this game. And they've got to be out of the dollar. You know, if you see the checkmate at the end of the game, you know, you're not going to fall for this interest rate hike. You're not going to, you know, you're not going to take that, you know, you're not going to fall for that maneuver. And you got to see beyond it, see what's really going to happen. And so to really position yourself and prepare for what's going to happen, regardless of whether the Fed gets a little bit more aggressive or not in the short run, because regardless, they're too little too late, and ultimately they're going to try to lower rates. But, you know, that's the way that's going to lead to the hyperinflation, if they abandon their tightening and immediately try to stop the recession. Again, it's like, you know, I've got my patient who's on heroin, and they want to get healthy, and so I've got them in my rehab program, and all of a sudden, you know, they're not taking heroin, and now they start going through withdrawal. If I immediately give them some more heroin so that they don't have the withdrawal symptoms, you know, what have I done? I mean, I'm screwing up the healing process. And so that's what the Fed, of course, is going to quickly try to do. The minute there's evidence that the higher interest rates are actually working, they're going to immediately look to cut the rates, because they don't want that evidence. They don't want the weakness in the economy. They don't want the unemployment. They don't want the lower housing prices, the lower stock market. But that's what we need. This is the way to resolve these problems. And it's not that, you know, yeah, you know, lower stock prices, lower housing prices are necessarily a good thing. You know, withdrawal symptoms aren't necessarily a good thing. The problem is, the bad stuff is what could be inflated in the first place. Those were where the problems were. Now they have to be corrected. And the problem for the U.S. economy, of course, is that, you know, we're not making anything and we're not saving and we've got our whole economy all screwed up. And we've got to get back to economic viability. Anyway, we're running out of time. Thanks, everybody, for listening again. www.europac.net is the website. www.europac.net. Give us a call toll-free. 800-727-7922. Talk to a Euro-Pacific Capital broker and open up an account. And if you have an account, and you know, try to add to it before it's too late. It's a good opportunity with this drop in some of the resource sectors to get it, take position. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening, and we will be back again live next Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. So long.